right, mom votes. We have to celebrate because it was at one point in time Sarah's birthday.
Yay! A month ago from recording.
Yeah. And we recorded it like the day after your birthday or something like that. But we forgot to say happy birthday on that interview. So happy birthday. I hope you had a great birthday.
It was a very nice birthday. It was very sweet. And my sister and I are going to kind of do a post-COVID birthday this summer. We planned a little trip to Baltimore.
Ooh.
Kind of in the middle. So we're just going to meet for one night in an Airbnb. She turned 30 in February, still in the midst of the COVIDs. My birthday was on like a Monday, you know, so.
I love that.
Yeah. So we're going to try and do a little Baltimore trip. So Sibs, if you're listening, I'm looking forward to it very much.
Oh, and happy 30th to your sister.
Yeah, she's in the 30 club now.
Woo-hoo. All right. Well, this episode was very exciting for us because this was our first guest that neither of us knew.
Our first official collaboration.
Yes, our first collab with a wonderful, inspiring, hardworking, so cool working mom. And she reached out to us. She has a podcast called The Savvy Working Mom.
Mm-hmm.
Her name is Whitney Hawthorne. And she reached out to us. She found us on the Instagrams.
On the social medias, the hashtags.
Yeah. And we were like, yes, we want to talk to you. So we're so glad that we did. Sarah, did you have fun with Whitney?
Oh my gosh. I felt like, you know, when you're in the presence of someone that's way cooler than you.
Yeah.
I had that sinking feeling again. But she was like happy to talk with us. And I was like, oh, yay. And it was really fun to talk to someone who's corporate because so many of my teacher friends and like mom friends are also teachers or they're at home with their kiddos. So it's rare that I talk to someone who's like a corporate mama. So right. That was a really cool comparison to make.
Yeah. And like so much of it was the same, like the same mental, emotional, physical
mm-hmm.
struggle/successes. So yeah, she was really great. She's helping a lot of working moms and we can't wait for you all to hear from her.
Hi, my name is Whitney Hawthorne. I am the founder of The Savvy Working Mom. It's a platform dedicated to helping working mothers thrive in life. I myself am also a working mom. I've got two littles at home, a one-year-old and a three-year-old. And I also run customer support for a Fortune 500 company.
Wow. So where do you live now? Where did you grow up?
Yes, that's a loaded question for me.
Uh-oh.
So right now in this moment, I live in Salt Lake City. We relocated here from Brooklyn during the pandemic, Halloween weekend. We moved out here from Brooklyn, New York. Having said that, I've lived all over. I was born in Fort Worth, Texas. My parents divorced when I was young and we moved to Pittsburgh. That's where my mom is from. But then over, you know, middle school into high school into college, I lived in Hershey, Pennsylvania. I lived in Cleveland, Ohio. I lived in Boston, Massachusetts. I lived in New York City a couple times. I've lived in Dallas, Texas. I've lived in Paris, France.
Wow.
I lived in Lisbon, Portugal. I lived in a small town called Barquisimeto, Venezuela.
Yeah.
And now I'm here in Salt Lake. So I just always say home is where my mom is because I've had the opportunity to live in a lot of different places.
Yeah. Did you have a favorite place?
It's hard to say. So when I lived in Barquisimeto in Venezuela, I was 16. It was before Chavez came to be president. And I really enjoyed, I was 15 going into 16 that year. And I really enjoyed the friends that I made there. The country itself is beautiful. They've got beaches, they've got plains, they've got mountains. Like you can go skiing in Venezuela, which I don't think people realize. They just have a very robust environmental system. And the people are just lovely. The food is great. At least my friends were lovely. And so I really enjoyed that year. It was amazing. But then I don't know how do you compare that to being 21 in Paris, you know, which is I lived in Paris. And that was honestly very fabulous. A lot of fun, a lot of walking through. through beautiful neighborhoods and eating all the food.
And like the baked goods,
I ate all the cheese. Mm-hmm. Yes, and so many croissants and pain au raisin. I'm actually not into chocolate, which I know is bizarre, but I don't like chocolate. But so pain au raisin, croissants, and just the fresh baguettes, so delicious. So Paris was pretty great too. And then I lived in New York right after college, which is a really fun city to be a young, single, ready to mingle adult in. So it's hard. It's honestly, it's so hard to pick a place because they were all so different. And I'm actually, to my surprise, really enjoying Salt Lake so far. Like in the middle of this pandemic, it is a beautiful, beautiful locale. Like the mountains, the sky is so blue. It's a lot of outdoor space. It's very kid friendly. And so I am actually enjoying Salt Lake a lot more than I thought that I would.
Do you love to travel because of all that? Or do you find yourself being more of like, I just want to be in one place because you've moved around so much? Yeah.
No, I absolutely love it. I absolutely love it. When my first son was born, in his first year of life, he got on, we counted 16 planes. Yeah. And a few of those I did by myself.
I feel like accomplished that we took Joan to England when she was a year. We did that like one time. And that was like our big travel accomplishment. Yeah. It was a very long flight.
No, that is big, and that's a long flight. That is a long flight.
Oh my gosh. We just did our first flight with Aubrey, and I was so tired. And we just went from Virginia to Florida. But I have been to Lisbon and to Paris. My roommates and I, when I was in college, we did a whole big backpacking thing for like 2 months. And my husband he did a study abroad thing in Venezuela.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. He did a music teaching thing. Oh, that's amazing. Thing. Wow. They worked with a music school there. He was.
Oh, that's so cool. Do you know which city he was in?
Find out and let you know. What'd you say?
Sounds good.
He said the capital city. Yeah, Caracas.
Caracas for a week. And then.
Caracas.
Oh, it's gorgeous up in the mountains.
Oh, yeah. Merida's so pretty.
Guest appearance.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, go Venezuela. I'm a big fan.
Can you tell our audience how you got connected with us? So most of our listeners are music teachers or musicians or moms, of working moms of some kind. I know you mentioned to us before about your mom.
Yes. So I was just cruising around on Instagram, probably looking at hashtags. I don't know if I was searching through hashtags or what, but you popped up and I was like, oh, what a cool idea. I love this idea of talking to moms who are teachers, because my mom was a teacher, and I just kind of started, following you from there.
Oh, we love that.
The power of the hashtags, Nicole.
I know. I
was it's real.
Have a social media, and Sarah was like, you have to use hashtags. That's awesome. So, and tell us about your Savvy Working Moms.
Sure. So the Savvy Working Mom it started as a blog, and now it's developed into a podcast and a series of digital courses to help working moms, like I said, thrive in life. And I started it because when I had my first son, so I work in corporate. And when I had my first son and went back to work after maternity leave, I realized that there just were not enough resources out there for working mothers. And maybe a better way to state it is for women who happen to work and also have children. What I found was a lot of resources for career development, career advancement, as well as resources on parenting, but nothing that in and of itself, in its nature, was speaking to me as the full woman that I was. Like for me, when I became a mom, I became more. I didn't sound like everything shifted and now Whitney's just a mom. No, I'm a mom. Like, I was a wife, I'm a daughter, a sister, an entrepreneur in my own right, even before I had the Savvy Working Mom, like a friend, I was all these other things. And then I also became a mother, and I couldn't find anything that spoke to me in that totality, that I found, addressed the specific challenges and needs that I had as a woman who works and wants to work and also wants to raise her children. And so I started doing, like, my thing is self-help. So I started like, where are the books? And where are the books? Where are the podcasts? Where are the resources? And like I said, I couldn't find any. I started at work asking other moms, right? Because there are moms at my job. I started asking them, well, how are you doing this? Like, you're making it work. How are you making it work? And, you know, the response was usually, was somewhere between, am I making it work? I don't know.
Yeah.
Wait, do you think this is working?
Yeah, exactly.
I think it appears that way.
Yeah. To, you know, like, oh no, this is my life is a show. It's just a mess. And it's like, well, it doesn't look like it. So why aren't we talking about this more? Like, why aren't we talking about the challenges more? And talking about the challenges, what I found was then talking with other moms about their challenges, started figuring out like what worked for them that might work for me, and things that were working for me that could work for them. And we just started learning from each other. And I thought, wow, this, we need more of this in the world. And that's how I created the Savvy Working Mom, was to get more of the stories of working moms out there and more of the tips, tricks, and hacks that help us to thrive. Because I believe that when working mothers thrive, all tides rise, right? Like, we are the backbone of society. We are contributing to the economy. We're raising the next generation. I mean, and teachers, your job is, I mean, you're educating the next generation on top of raising them. So like, it's when we do better, everyone does better. And that started to become my mission, outside of my job. Like, this is my real passion.
So I'm curious to know how it compares to what we experience in education, because everything you're saying resonated with the way that I felt, because I like you have a 1.5-year-old. So I am just recently learning the working mom thing. And I feel like my view of some things with corporate versus education are so different. But, you know, like, we can't, whenever my sister's in the corporate world, she's an engineer, and she's, when she talks about negotiating pay and, like, you know, I'm like, oh, folks. Yeah.
They say, here, this is what she will be paid.
And we say, yeah.
Here's the chart. Follow the chart.
Yeah. We, there is a chart. It is like, here you go on the chart. Yeah. There's no like mystery about it.
But I do feel like what you're saying about coming back from maternity leave, all of those feelings and thoughts and questions are super similar. So can you go into more detail about what you think, like what it, the experience is as a mom in the corporate world?
Yeah. And so I do think, first I'll share, I think there are some similarities that all moms who work for someone else have, right? So that's another thing, is I also found at that time there were, and still are, right, a lot of resources and talk to mompreneurs. But if you're not a mompreneur, again, at that time, there just wasn't a lot of resource that I could find. And the big difference in that is when you work for someone else, whether you're a teacher, a nurse, you work in administration, you're in an office setting, is that you don't control your schedule, right? That is the biggest thing, because ultimately what we as mamas need is flexibility. And so I think the lack of flexibility, it goes across all professions when you don't own your schedule, when somebody else controls it, which is what happens when you work for someone else. I think the other thing is that, as it turns out, women in American society are looked at to be the primary caregiver. And so that responsibility of taking care of this new life or 18-year-old life along the spectrum, but taking care of this life falls on you on top of your job, whatever your job is, right? That it's just because we're women in America, this is how the majority of our lives are set up. It's how society is set up. You are the primary caregiver, even if you're the breadwinner, right? In my house, I'm the breadwinner, and I can't tell you how many times I had to explain to daycare, like, if you need something urgent, you have to call my husband or you have to text me. They would just repeatedly call me. And I'm like, I'm in a meeting with hundreds of people, leading a meeting maybe. And I can't just pick up my phone. If you text me, I can read, you know, I can read it. And always on the lookout for that daycare phone number, for better, for worse. It's, but you know, it's just like trying to explain that to them, like, no, my husband. And like, also my husband's going to help pick my kid up, you know, like, it's not just me. It was so hard. It was so hard. Which is bizarre, but it just goes back to that idea. people just make the assumption that mama is going to be the primary caregiver, that mama is going to be taking care of all of the kids' needs, which we often do, right? We make the doctor's appointments. When there's an emergency, we're the ones to go do the pickup. We're probably also doing the meal planning and the prepping and the cooking and hopefully splitting up the cleaning, but maybe not, you know? So it's kind of cleaning up after the cleaning, if you know what I mean, sometimes too. So it's, you know, so I think no matter what your role is like, if you work for someone else and you're a woman in America, like, you have all of those same constraints, you have all of those same challenges. And I think from a corporate perspective, some things are different. So for me, right, when I had my first son, I was a director, which is a leader position. And now I'm a VP, I'm an officer at the company that I work at. And that, that gives me a certain amount of flexibility, because it's kind of like that. And I mean, part of it is also how I've taken control of my schedule. But I'm always on. Like, I'm always on. Sometimes I have to work on the weekend, but guess what? If sometimes I have to work on the weekend, sometimes during the week, I need to take care of my kids or my life. Like, I need to take care of me, you know? And so that I think is one of the kind of key differences for corporate. There is also, unlike other jobs where they are seniority based or there's a clear path to development, in corporations, you don't always have that clear path. So in fact, oftentimes you don't. And so how do you get ahead without sacrificing all of your life? How do you get ahead without staying late is an ongoing question, because it's not just like, oh, I showed up, did the things I was supposed to do from this hour to this hour, and after a certain amount of time, I'm going to see evolution in my career. It's just, corporations don't normally work like that. So you have that added challenge of often needing to carve a path forward for yourself if you have ambitions of growing your career.
So much of what you just said resonated with me, even like comparing corporate to teaching. And like, I have an amazing like husband partner, like we're 50-50 with the parenting, but like what you said, the assumptions, you know, like when I had a choir concert, people would ask, oh, who has the kids? It's like their father.
Their dad.
my husband, him. The one.
Yep.
Well, and also that assumption like makes you, can make you, this happened to me, like makes you feel guilty. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
you're
the one.
And yeah. Like the nurse, you know, like, they know I'm a teacher in the county. She called my number, like these messages, Joan was like at the nurse's office. Nothing was wrong, but she was like just trying to get a hold of me. I'm like, you know, I'm teaching. Like, you know, like call my husband.
Yeah. No, and it happens all the time. It makes me crazy. I remember once I was at a business dinner. It was one of the first times that I was traveling after my son had been born and I had to travel for work. And we were at a dinner and it was me and mostly men, a couple other women, but everyone knew that I was like a new parent and was happy to talk about it. But I was not the only parent at the table. And I also was not actually the only new parent at the table, which was interesting. There was a guy who had a one-year-old. And I think my son was maybe 8 months or something like that at the time. Anyway, so they look at me and they go, well, but who's with your son and who's taking care of him? And I was like, oh, I don't know. Whoa, I'm glad that you got to ask me that. I don't know. Where is he? I don't know. Let me check the tracking device I put on him. Like, but because they did not ask the other guy that, and they didn't ask. And it was interesting because you could see the difference in the questions that were being asked to the women and versus the questions being asked to the men. And I was just like, I'm so sick of people asking me what I'm doing about childcare, but not asking any of the fathers who are around me. So that's my new response whenever someone asks me that, because to your point, it gets asked a lot. I just go, I'm so glad that you asked me that. I have no idea.
Oops, it's like Dory in Finding Nemo. Ooh.
Ooh.
Where are they?
Think.
Where are they?
So how do you, because Sarah and I talk about this a lot too, how do you balance that drive to progress in your career with like prioritizing, you know, okay, this does matter. I do need to do this for my job and this doesn't. I can let this go so that I can be home. Like, how do you go about choosing those things?
So I really like the theory around, I don't know if you've heard this. I think Nora Roberts is the one that coined it, but it's the rubber balls, glass balls idea. And it's this idea that, you know, we're always juggling as mamas, especially as working moms, we're always juggling so many balls. We have so many balls in the air. And all of those balls are not made of glass. Some of them are made of rubber. So some of them are glass, some of them are rubber. Some of them can fall and bounce on the floor and roll away and still be there to go pick up. And some of them are glass, and if they drop, they break, and then that's it. And so I take that idea, and then I look at my life in kind of 9 different areas, right? So like, I've got my career, I've got my personal development, I've got my finances, I've got my relationship with my kids, I've got my marriage, I've got my relationship with other adults, like out in my community, right? And so, you know, you've got these various areas of life, or I have. And so I look and say, okay, within each one of those areas of life, I have a bunch of balls, and some are rubber and some are glass. And sometimes the ones that are glass, I have to do what it takes to keep those in the air, and I can let the rubber ones fall. And it's a conscious decision to do that, but it's one where then I feel less guilt when I let the rubber balls fall, because I'll know they'll be there. So for example, to make it a little bit more tangible, when I had my my second son earlier this year, so I had my son, he's 1, right? So I had him in a pandemic, and like pushed with the mask on and the whole deal. It was a lot. It was so much. But I had my son in a pandemic, in a time when, you know, Black Lives Matter was growing, the George Floyd death had happened. I had him before that, but I was home on maternity leave, and it was a lot. So it was just a lot for me. So for those who can't see me, I'm a Black woman. My children are actually biracial because my husband is white, and like, there's just a lot that comes with that. And so this past summer was a lot. And I was juggling all these balls, right? Cause I'm getting ready to go back to work and all this stuff. And I looked at the like world of my health. And I said to myself, you know what? My mental health right now is a glass ball. Mm-hmm. And I need to do what I need to do to keep that thing in the air. My physical health, specifically my weight, on the other hand, is a bit of a rubber ball. And I'm going to let that thing fall. It's going to roll under the couch. It's going to collect some dust. And I am going to be all right with that. Because that mental health glass ball is what I needed to be able to keep things going. So I just try to like look at my life at that, like that in general. Now my son just turned 1. And so I'm like, okay, I gotta go find that ball. It's somewhere.
It rolled away.
It rolled away, but I gotta find it. I gotta dust it off and like get that thing going again. But you know, it took a while. I had a baby, we relocated cities, the pandemic, like all the things. And so now I'm ready to get back there. So I just try and look like that across all areas of my life. And when new things come at me, especially from a work perspective, I'm always asking myself, like, is this a glass ball or rubber ball? Is it a glass ball or rubber ball? And if it's a glass ball, what do I have to do to keep it up in the air? And so that helps me to prioritize a bit where I should be spending my time and my energy. And then from there, I try to focus on the glass balls and be okay with the rubber balls falling. And sometimes it's hard, you know, like it's hard. It was hard, like knowing that I don't fit into some of my, you know, pre-maternity clothes. Like my first pregnancy, like I lost the weight really. I'm not gonna say easy because I did work for it, but it came off. This one, not so much. Again, part of it was, I mean, mostly was a conscious choice, but it still like stings a little when I try to get those jeans on and they do not want to go over my thighs. Like it still stings. But I try to be okay with it. And I am okay with that. And I try, but all the rubber balls, I guess is what I'm saying. I try to be okay with letting them fall, like letting go of the guilt that's associated with it, letting go of any of the bad feelings by focusing on the fact that, hey, I have all these glass balls in the air and that's where I need to focus.
I love how the balls can change from glass to rubber too. An example how sometimes this one's going to be rubber right now, and if it falls, it's going to bounce back or roll and I can go find it. I feel like I agree with you, like, yeah, the physical health definitely became a rubber ball during the, because last year we was stressful, like my husband lost his job with the pandemic, we moved just like y'all, so I was like, okay, this is what's glass right now, I'm gonna use that. What's glass?
Yeah, and I think the trick is, like you said, when you let it go, then you have to train yourself how you think about the rubber ball that you let go. Like, okay, it's gone. Like, don't feel guilty about it. It'll be there, like you said. And when things shift, I'll pick it back up.
Blow some dust off it, Windex.
That's right. Clean it up a little. And then get it going.
So do you want to dive into the, you kind of already have, but the developing work-life balance?
Sure. Yeah, we can talk about it. So with work-life balance, I mean, I think the first thing I have to say is a work-life balance is a myth. It's not real. because like, what are you even trying to balance? Is it your time? Is it your energy? Is it the hours in the day that, like, I don't understand, like, I don't even understand what you're trying to balance. And I also get really frustrated about the idea that work is one thing and then life is everything else.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because life is so much more than just not work. Life is your personal development. It's your kids. It's your self-care. It's your community. It's your church if you're religious. It's your hobbies. It's your family. It's so many more things than just not being work, which is what work-life balance tries to set up, this idea of like, oh, everything else has to somehow be counterweighted by work. And that's
like,
just
it's like half of the pie.
Instead, yes.
Like it should be that small piece of the pizza no one wants.
Exactly. Right. Well, I mean, hopefully you like it. I mean, I like, I like all the pizza. Hopefully you like it.
It's got some pepperoni on there, you know, but this side's got,
okay. Extra cheese on it too. So that's the other side's got the extra cheese on
it. That's got the buffalo chicken.
So I really think it's more about creating work-life harmony, which is the idea of, I think, integration. It's not even work-life harmony. It's harmony across all the areas of your life. And some are going to be more important than others at different times. And that's okay, right? Sometimes work is going to come before our kids, and that's okay. Sometimes our kids are going to come before work, and that's okay. Sometimes going to the spa or getting a manicure or taking a walk or whatever it is that you do to feel good is going to come first before your kids and before work. And that's okay, right? So it's about finding, I think, the harmony between all of those areas so that you as an individual feel joy and have peace. Because when you feel joy and you're at peace, you are going to be the best you. And when you're the best you, you can serve others in the most magical way, right? When you're running on fumes, you can't show up in any of your area of your life as your best self. And that's what the world needs, is you as your best self, not you running on fumes trying to do all the things and balance work against every other area that needs you.
Yeah, that's so good.
Yeah. Happy Mother's Day to everyone.
Yeah.
When we're recording this, Mother's Day was yesterday.
Yeah.
I said this to my husband yesterday as we were falling asleep. You know, I was trying to like get compliments out of him, as you do. and he was like, I was like, well, you know, sometimes like I see moms post up on Mother's Day that are like, my kids and being a mom is the most important thing to me. And I'm like, I looked at Clyde, I'm like, if I'm being honest, it would be like, it's a very important, you know, but like it's not my entire identity. And it's like, it's other things too, you know, like I'm also like a teacher and I love like doing all these other things as well. And they are so important to me. But when people say like, my kids are my whole life, I'm like,
well, and your husband.
Yeah. And I'm like, oh, my husband. Yeah. I like him a lot. Like, spoiler alert. I like my husband a lot. And he's going to be around hopefully, you know, for the duration here. I don't know. So I was, that was reminded me of that, like having all these things together, harmony at peace, not let one thing like work or motherhood like consume you.
Yeah. And I find, so like I coach women, I take on a very select number of coaching clients throughout the year. And, you know, I oftentimes I end up working with women who kind of did that, where they put their kids first and their kids were their everything. Like their everything, everything was about the kids. And then the kids turn into teenagers who are like, thanks mom, but you're just my Uber driver now. Mm-hmm. And then mama starts to feel lost, right? Like, who am I? Not feel fulfilled and really wonder who they are. Look and see, you know, their career kind of stalled out. Their marriage maybe isn't in the best place, a little bit more of a roommate situation, or like actually going through divorce. And I feel like a lot of that comes from forgetting that you do have other parts to you. In addition to being a mom. Now, maybe being a mom is the most important job that you have, and that's okay. But to be the best mom you can be, you have to be able to be your best self, your best, like, full self, not just, there's no such thing as just being the best mom. Mm-hmm.
Well, and it's so important for your kids to see that.
I think
too,
so.
As an example. Yeah.
Yeah, like my mom worked, my grandma worked. I come from a very long line of working women. And that was important to me. It's instrumental in me knowing that it was okay to work. It also was inspiring to me to see, you know, my mom, when she wanted something, or my grandma, they wanted something, they'd be like, okay, we got to work for it. We're going to work and we're going to figure it out and we're going to get it. And that was like, oh, I can work for things and I can have all the things that I want if I work for them, right? Mm-hmm. Which is, I don't know, it's very much shaped who I am. And I'm glad to have seen that from my mom. And I hope that my sons see that too. And that they take those values from me. And also not just for them to see that they can work, but also to see that, yeah, women work too. And women can provide, and women are, you know, the equal to men and maybe superior in some ways. But that might be a different podcast.
Hey,
so
that's an after hours episode.
Yeah. Hey, for any man who has watched his wife give birth, they probably would admit to that at that point.
Yeah. They'd be like, you know what? Yeah, you win.
Yeah. Switching to over to some mom stories, do you have any, like, what is your favorite part of being a mom? Hardest part of being a mom?
Or funniest? Yes, or funniest.
I have a very funny story that actually that just happened to share with you.
All right.
Yeah. But I mean, I'll tell you the favorite. I'll do the favorite and the hardest though quickly. I think my favorite part is now that my oldest is three. I really love seeing the development. It's amazing to see how they go from little mush balls to now he can, you know, he struggles sometimes. He thinks a lot about his words, you know, and he starts to stutter and the car went. And I'm like, yes, but the car went. Like, you know that. Seeing him develop is really awesome. And the cuddles are pretty sweet too. Mm-hmm. I think the hardest part is and this is that guilt thing I think I have to let go of, but I get frustrated with myself for being frustrated with them when they're just being babies. You know, he's a toddler. Yes, he's going to be like, mama, 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 mama. And sometimes it makes me crazy. And I'm like, I just want to go someplace. I don't know. I gotta go someplace. I get frustrated with myself for being frustrated with him for just being a three-year-old, you know? So that part is hard for me, because I wish I didn't feel that way, but I can't lie that I do, you know? So it's just like an ongoing internal battle, and I don't like that part. The funny story though I have is a little bit about him being a three-year-old. He's potty training, mostly potty trained, and wears a diaper for sleeping, for nap and for bedtime. Well, the other day he was sick and like coming out both ends sick. And aww. I know, poor little guy, a little virus. It started on Friday. Well, actually for Friday, he said his tummy wasn't feeling great, but we were kind of like, what do you mean by this? And he of course couldn't tell us. Saturday morning he was fine. And then Saturday afternoon he was like, mama, aww. And then like just projectile vomit everywhere. And I was like, oh no, bud. So that was Saturday into Sunday. And then Monday morning, he seemed to be feeling better. And I had a really early meeting. Sometimes my days start at 7:30. So I had a 7:30 meeting. It went to 8:30. I had a break until my 9:00. So I was hanging out with him. He had taken off his diaper because he's a nature boy like that. He does not like clothes or diapers. And so he was, you know, running around the house on my break. And I go to, like, I'm about to get on this call at 9:00. So maybe call it 8:55, 8:57. He crawls and sits, you know, he crawls up on me and he wants a cuddle because he's three, right? So he like runs, he acts crazy. Then he wants a cuddle. Then he runs and acts crazy. Then he wants a cuddle. And so we're doing that cycle. And he crawls up on me and then he goes, and he's like, oh, mama, that's a big fart.
Oh, no.
And I was like, son, that was more than a fart.
Oh, no.
So, like, my meeting's about to start, and I'm on so, guys, I'm going to be off camera for the first 10 minutes as I try to clean myself and him. I mean, I had to grab my husband, like, please come help, but I had
save
to
me.
The baby. Oh, I had to clean myself like while I'm trying to be on this call, which was a kind of a big deal call. It wasn't like one of those little, like, you can't pay attention. We were welcoming on a new business partner, and you know, their CEO was on the line,
oh my
and
like,
their whole team. And so I'm like, ye I'll be on camera soon. Thankfully, my team like ran with it, because I was like, why don't we do introductions and let's do a let's tell us an interesting fact since we're getting to know each other. You know, that makes it
two interesting facts.
Exactly. Like, I'll go last. I want to hear about all of you first.
Oh my gosh. I do that all the time in the classroom when I like need to go do something or talk to a kid. I'm like, turn to the person next to you and talk about Batman or Superman. And then fight about something.
Yes. So that was like definitely a mom moment for me, mom moment where, yeah, it's like, he's like, that was a big fart.
It's like, oh, it was more than a fart.
So much more.
Do you work from home anyway? Like, is that your setup pre-pandemic?
No. So pre-pandemic, I was in the office 5 days a week, unless I was traveling.
Okay.
And now I've always, even through the pandemic, after returning from maternity leave, I was going in the office 1 to 2 days a week. And I'm just, right now we're continuing that. Maybe I'll be in 3 days a week. It's just, it really kind of just depends on the day and what's going on. Through the pandemic, most of our corporation started working from home. But like the senior leaders kept coming into the office, and the folks who are operational, right, who are, so we have some essential workers, right? The essential workers continue to do their job on site.
Mm-hmm. Do you like it at home?
Let me tell you, it is a loaded question. A lot of loaded questions for me. I like it now. I like it now that we moved to Salt Lake and we got a whole house with like more than one bathroom and a yard, and I have my own office space.
Yeah.
When I was working from home in my tiny two-bedroom apartment in Brooklyn that four human beings and a dog were inhabiting, and I would be working on a fold-out tray in the bedroom or at the table that served as the dining room table, the craft table, the play table, and also my office, like, not so much. I'd rather be in the office. So that, like, the environment that I'm in now with this my own office space, I think is great. I miss interaction. I am an introvert, so I don't need a lot of interaction, but I do miss like seeing people and when we need to strategize or brainstorm, doing that in person. Cause even over video, it's just, you know, it's just not the same.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's, my husband works from home now and he's an introvert. So he's like 98% ecstatic to be working from home. The 2%, he's like, oh, I kind of miss like people.
Funny. Yeah. Yeah, I'm like that. I don't know if you've seen that meme. It's like, it's, I follow a lot of introvert memes, and it's like, what is it? Says something like, I can't wait until we're back to normal in air quotes, so I can start missing out on meetings again, or missing out on get-togethers again, or something like that. Basically, yeah, start ghosting people. I can't wait people to start inviting me out so I can just keep ghosting them.
Yeah. I saw one that was like, when we go back, I still won't be able to come to your thing because I don't want to.
My favorite was, which one reminds me of my husband. It was like, I'm not mad at you. I'm not ignoring you. I'm not upset. I just don't have a thing to say. That's it. When I have something to say, I will say it.
That's it.
And I'm like, really? That's it?
That is me. I'm the person who would ask that question. Yeah. Are you mad?
Yeah.
Are you sad?
Are you ignoring me?
Just literally nothing to say.
So, what about, let's talk about teachers. Do you have a favorite that you ever had?
I do. It's funny that you asked. I've had like a few favorite teachers. When I was in fourth grade, I had a teacher named Miss Dithrich. She was our math teacher, and I really liked her a lot. I think she was just so understanding. I feel like a lot of the teachers just looked at us kids as not people. And she really saw us as people, as individuals. And I valued her a lot, Miss Dithrich from fourth grade. And then I had a lot of really great teachers, honestly, through middle and into high school. But I think she is the one that stands out the most for me.
Aw, shout out.
Yeah.
Miss Dithrich. She's listening.
Yeah. If you're listening, send us an email. Do you have any music background?
It's interesting that you asked that. So I have that, like I went to a school and had the opportunity to play a bunch of instruments, but never kept up with it background. So I started with the piano. I played the trumpet all through high school, middle school into high school, I played trumpet. And then I played the cello for 2 years. I fake played the cello for 2 years. I really wanted to play, but I really did not want to practice. Mm-hmm. So yeah. So that was that. And then my brothers, I do have a funny story about teachers actually, and siblings and bands. So in concert band was my brother, myself, and two other brothers actually who played, one played the trumpet, and the other played a different instrument. And my brother was much better than me, but he's also younger. And so
Not acceptable.
And so the other brother, not my brother, but the other brother was in the band. He was almost always first chair and I was always second and my brother was always third. And sometimes the other guy wouldn't be there and then I would be first. Sometimes we go first to second, but my brother could never get past third chair until I graduated. Which is funny for me because I'm like, hey, I'm better than you. Look at me on paper. I'm the second chair. He was so much better, like so much better. And every once in a while they would like throw him a solo, which was honestly better for everybody else because again, he was a better player, but he was my younger brother. So.
Oh, I love that.
Like how the teacher knew. He was like, no, I'm not going there.
We can't do this. Right.
Miss Limke and Mr. Copenhagen. They were amazing. His name was Copenhaver, but we called him Copenhagen.
Oh, okay. I was like, wow, that's a name.
Yeah, Copenhaver and Miss Limke. Yeah, and they knew the deal. Older siblings.
Have you ever taught siblings, Sarah?
Yes.
In the same class?
Yes.
Yeah.
Twins, usually.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But I've had a few twins sets. This year, no. But yeah, my old position, I had a lot of siblings.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've had it older and younger in the same class.
Yeah, the ones that pop out, I'm sure I have, but the ones that pop out, I had several sets of twins.
Yeah.
The other brother I was talking about, they were twins.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh. So what advice would you have for somebody who is a working lady and pregnant, like getting ready to go into maternity leave and then going into coming back to work?
Wow.
I guess 2 points.
Yeah, I'm sure they're already getting so much advice from so many people.
Right, right.
So the unsolicited advice that I would add is, you know, make it about you. When you do okay, your baby does okay. When you don't do okay, your baby's not going to do as good. So make it about you. Take the help. Whoever's offering you help, but take it on your terms. If someone thinks they're helping you, but it doesn't feel like help, then they're not helping you. Mm-hmm. If somebody wants to show up and hold the baby, but what you really need is for them to show up and clean the kitchen. If they're not willing to come clean the kitchen, they don't need to come by. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you need someone to hold the baby, you do, but just if someone has to help you how you need to be helped, and that is okay. Make it about making sure that your needs are met, because when your needs are met, you're going to be stronger for your kids. Mm-hmm. And then I think the other thing that I would say, especially going back to work, well, two things going back to work. One is, actually I have three. Okay. Three things going back to work, three big ones. The one that just popped in my head that I would be remiss without sharing is like, figure out where you're going to cry before you get back to work. Because the first time you're away from that baby, it doesn't matter if it's your first or your second, it's just hard. Mm-hmm. It is hard and you're going to cry. And you don't want to be trying to figure out where to cry. Just know, is there a bathroom you can lock? You got to go out to your car. Do you have to take a walk? Just, it's going to happen and it's okay. It's okay. Just know where you're going to do it. So you don't have to worry about that part. Then the second thing I would say is really along that line of it's hard. It is hard. It's hard. It's hard. It's hard. I can't say that enough. It's hard. There's nothing wrong with you if it feels like it's hard. And if it feels easy, then like find me and tell me how you made it easy, because I have yet to meet a mama who said going back to work after maternity leave was easy.
Right.
And because it's hard and really shouldn't be as hard as I think it is for most folks, know that it's okay to ask for help. again, like, get the support that you need. It's okay to delegate. It's okay to ask for help when you're coming back from leave. Don't worry about coming back and people saying bad things about your dedication to your job, your ability to continue to do your job. If you need help in certain areas, just get it so that you can get back to a rhythm and a flow sooner rather than later. And then I think the last thing, the third thing that I would share is coming back to work from maternity leave is an interesting time to rebrand yourself within your office. And I think, or within your place of work, really. And I think you can do that because we all have a personal brand, right? Everyone looks at you and they think, oh, Nicole, and this is what they think about Nicole, or, oh, Sarah, and this is what they think about Sarah. Or same for Whitney, right? This is what they think about Whitney. When you've been gone for a little bit, when you come back, you get to help level set or reset what people think about you. So take the opportunity to rebrand yourself. You're coming back with fresh eyes, right? Where people have been in the humdrum ongoing forever of the job. You're coming back with some fresh eyes, and organizations don't often get the opportunity to have someone who has all the history and also a set of fresh eyes. So use that to your advantage. When you want people to, like, and when you come back, make sure that you tell people how to interact with you and what's important to you. Don't let them tell you, right? If you want to talk about your kids, great. If you don't, then don't, and tell them I'm not so interested in talking about my personal life with you. Like, everyone is different. If you want to talk about them, that's cool too. Like, if you want to be known for certain things, like, the moment you get back, start talking about all of the work that you would like to be doing and remind them of all the work that you did before you went out on leave, and really focus it on the work and the outcomes that you have driven and that you want to drive, and use, again, that opportunity to really rebrand yourself in the way that you see fit, not in how the people around you want to assume you are.
I think that's so interesting and translates super well to what we do, because we, as music teachers, run like a whole program. It's not just like a regular class. Like, we lead the department.
There's like an advertising to it, you know,
get
retention in it. Yeah, there's a whole bunch. It's not just, I signed up for math class, here I am.
Yeah. And I see a lot of places music teachers really worrying about all the numbers have gone down because we haven't been able to do what we do. There's no concerts, there's no singing. And somebody said that to me. They said, you know what, even if you do have to start over, which is a huge bummer after the pandemic, this isn't just to moms. This is all, like, anybody who runs something like that. Even if you do feel like you have to start over, it's a great opportunity to revamp something. And for me, what I'm thinking is it's a great opportunity to revamp our calendar. Like, we don't pick, like you said, the glass balls and the rubber balls. Like, we don't have to do what we always did in the order we always did it before, performance wise, just because we always did it and they were used to it. Like, they're not, the kids are 2 years.
Yeah, almost, they're not used to anything.
Yeah. So they don't remember, or we're too young, or are graduating. So they don't know any different. So it's a really great opportunity to, like, rework some things, especially if you've become a new mom in this time, so that it fits your, you know, situation and new lifestyle. I think I love that.
For sure.
What do you do? I was talking with somebody about this today. What do you do? Because a lot of what you're saying is, another way to say it would be like speaking up for your boundaries. Like, I do want to talk about this. I don't want to do, you know, here are my goals. But what do you, or like somebody comes to the house and wants to hold the baby, but you really need them to clean the kitchen. What do you do when you speak those things and the person on the receiving end doesn't receive it?
So, that's a great question. And I think that's something that we all struggle with, and it happens to all of us. For me, if I'm speaking a need to someone and they're not hearing the need, then I will try and say it in a different way, because I'm going to make the assumption. I know what they say about assuming, but I'm going to make the assumption that you just didn't understand what I said to you. So I'm going to say it in a different way. If I was like, I need you to clean the kitchen, I need help with the kitchen right now, and you don't understand me, then I can get more specific and say, could you help me by washing the dishes? Could you help me by sweeping the floor? I know you want to hold the baby, but what I really could use right now is to not have to worry about cleaning the counters. My fridge has not been cleaned in a month. if you would be so inclined to just clean one shelf, it would be a world of difference.
One shelf.
I mean, so you ask in different ways. For me, it's like ask in different ways to see if someone can help, to make sure that they comprehend what it is you're asking. Cause I feel like sometimes people just don't get it. I think sometimes you need to be very specific with some folks, so that they understand. But sure, there are people who are going to be like, no, I don't want to do that. And you say, okay, that's okay too. Cause no one has to help you, right? They don't have to help you. One way to get them maybe to do it is to show them what's in it for them, right? And that's sometimes about reframing the ask. So if we just stick with this idea of like clean the kitchen instead of hold the baby, it's like, hey, I really need you to clean the kitchen. I just really want to hold the baby. Well, I know when you said you came over here, you really wanted to help me, and that's the help that I need. What I really need is, because I just had a C-section and I can't bend over. You don't even have to really give it, because I just had a baby. I pushed a baby out of my vagina. And
it's not bleeding everywhere
right now. Exactly. So if you want to help me, this is how I need help, right? So, but like articulating it and help, like, and what are they going to get out of it? Like, I know you wanted to help me, and I really appreciate it. And this is the way that I need help. Just kind of sharing it, I think, in that way. Mm-hmm. And of course, they can say no. And I think that important thing is to not get bent out of shape when someone says no for not helping you. Like, then it's just not a good fit. It's not a good match. You say, okay, you don't want to do that. That's totally fine. We'll just sit here. And you can hold the baby for a second while I go pee, and then I'm going to come back, and then I'm going to take my baby, because this is what makes me feel good. And if you want to help me, that's how I need help. So I think it's just, you know, it's explaining how you need the help. It's being specific about it. It's making sure that they comprehend what you said. It's showing them, if there's something in it for them, what it is. And it could be a learning experience. It could be that they get to go tell somebody else that they helped you, because sometimes people just want to help you so they can have that story. That's fine, as long as you get the help. And I think it's also making sure that people understand exactly what you need when you ask them. Because if I go back to the idea of clean the kitchen, that might feel very overwhelming, when really all I need is for you to throw the dishes in the dishwasher or empty the dishwasher, which is not as overwhelming as, like, I don't know, scrubbing the oven kitchen. In the whole kitchen.
Yeah, people have different standards of clean. It's, are the dishes put away? Good. Good. The kitchen's clean.
Yes. Yeah. I feel like it's more that concept is super difficult at work, but I think it's super important for women to be courageous and speak it up and ask for those things.
Yeah. And I think that's the same thing at work, right? It's, if you approach it at work with this idea of like, hey, I need help and I need support, but like, it's not, you're not someone that I can directly delegate this to or force to like mandate to do the thing for me. It's the same idea of setting it up of, here's what I need. Here's why I need it. Here's the bigger picture about it, right? If I need you, I need time to, like, I don't know, I was going to try and make a teacher analogy based on my mom, but like, I just feel like, I'm like, if I need time to write a lesson plan, if I need time to decorate my classroom, I don't know what it is, but you know, if I need whatever, if I'll just take it, like, if I'm at work, right? And it's like, I got to get this presentation done. PowerPoint presentations take me forever. So I really like to ask other people to help me with that. And there are people, I mean, at this level now, again, I'm very senior at my job, so most people will think that I'm mandating it even when I'm not. But even before, you know, I would just approach it and say, hey, could you help me, like, with these few slides, or help me with this PowerPoint? Because I need to work on this other thing. And when I do this other thing, here's how it fits into the bigger picture. If you can take this off of my plate for this moment, then I'm going to be able to set our team up to do X, Y, and Z. Right. Mm-hmm. And that's like, when people understand how it fits in the bigger picture, it makes them, I think, more inclined to help. And also when they really understand what it is that you're asking them to do, I think a lot of people will not do something because they're unclear on what it is that you want them to do. And so there's fear. Some people might have fear of not doing it right, or fear of looking silly. Some people might think that they're just not competent and able to do the thing because you didn't explain it in a way that helped them to understand, like, no, you're totally capable of doing this thing. Like, you can empty the dishwasher. You can throw these words on a slide, you know? So I think that being specific really does help. And I also think not getting bent out of shape when someone says no, because then that leaves the window or door or whatever open that you could ask them again, because you have no idea what's going on in their life and why they could or couldn't help you. And so, you know, it's like, no, okay, fine, thanks. And you just keep it moving, versus trying to make them feel bad for saying no, because that's not good for anybody.
Yeah. That's good. Yeah. Explaining the why. Delegating. These are great leadership skills. Yeah. Now for us, sometimes we're delegating to kids. So yeah. Then the trick is just be okay with it not being 100% how you would have done it. Yeah. Okay.
Well, that's all delegation. Let me tell you, no one is going to do it like you do it. No one, can. So yeah, it's just be okay. Yeah. If the outcome is near where you want it, usually that's enough, right?
Yeah. It's done.
That was a rubber ball. Yeah. They took care of that. So let it go.
This is such good stuff.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Thank you so much for coming on, Whitney.
No, thank you for having me. And thank you for doing what you do. I love that you're out there supporting moms who are teachers and moms in general. So thank you.
Yeah.
Do you have anything you want to plug before you go?
Yeah, you have any plugs?
Sure. I have a free self-care book that I would love to share with your audience. I can give you the link, hopefully you can edit that part out or we'll just keep going, but I can give you the link and you can put it in the show notes. And it's a free book. So it's Mother's Day. Happy Mother's Day to all the mamas who are listening. And it breaks down self-care from like if you have 1 minute, if you have 2 minutes, if all the way up to if you have 15 minutes, so that you can find something that you can do with the time that you have. And then there's also options for, you know, depending on the budget that you have, some things that cost no money at all and some things that are maybe about booking a spa weekend. But you know, across the board, it's really about based on the time and or lack thereof and budget that you have, like how can you create a good self-care routine?
Ooh, I love that.
Yeah, listeners love that. You can squeeze in 5 minutes during planning.
Yes.
Yes. What's it called?
The Busy Mama's Guide to Self-Care.
Thank you so much, Whitney. Don't forget, everyone, you can check her out at The Savvy Working Mom. And you can see she's on Instagram and she has her own podcast as well if you want to listen to another awesome working mom podcast. And if you would like to send us a mom note, if you worked in corporate before or you were inspired by anything Whitney said, we'd love to hear from you. You can send us your mom notes at momnotespod@gmail.com.
Thanks for listening.
Bye.
We have a child.
Oh yeah, it's fine.
Yeah, sorry. You're fine. Go tell daddy to tell daddy he's still crying, okay? Or go in and hug him, okay?
Thank you for crying.
Okay. Oh, go tell daddy, okay? Can you go down and tell daddy? Okay. Concerned big sister.
I like it.
She's like, he's still crying, and I went in and hugged him, and then he's.
Aww.
I know.